Okay, we're going to do something a little bit different. I think we did this in episode one where we played a soundbite like right out of the gate.
Yeah, was it
a
movie?
We set the tone. Yeah, it was. It was a movie. You picked this one. Yes. I get to pick the star for this one, okay?
Okay, got it.
Okay, so Gary's intro was a lot more light and fun, and we laughed. This one is the very opposite. I want to play a very quick snippet. This is the father of Jimmy McGrath. If you don't live here in Connecticut, Jimmy McGrath was a high school athlete, very beloved by his community, went to a high school party with his friends, and tragically died that night after a fight broke out. That's the best way I could put it. A fight broke out, and he was just an innocent bystander there and, you know, wrong place, wrong time, basically. This is Jimmy's father, Kevin, because they are now entering into a second trial of Jimmy's killer to see what his fate will be. And this is what Kevin McGrath shared on my show a couple weeks ago. Oh, if I could just play it. There we go.
In hindsight, you know, I don't think the testimony of the two individuals that received immunity kind of swayed anyone in either direction from their testimony. But I do believe, you know, a lot of people, you know, the sympathy for Raul Valley is he's standing there alone, and he should be standing there with the other two people. I think we're all 100% in agreement with that.
And so we kind of start talking about it, and he ultimately says in this episode that at the end of the day, the person responsible for his son's death is the one that is going to a second trial, and he feels good about that. But he talks about immunity deals. And honestly, this is something that we are hearing a lot about here in Connecticut, but even with other cases, the idea of what is an immunity deal? Do you basically get off the hook for giving enough information? And why in the world do we even have immunity deals when you're talking about severe cases like a murder? So that's what we're talking about today. Immunity deals. It's heavy, but it is something that people want to talk about.
It is. And it started us really going down the path of what people in the community really don't understand about some of the police work that goes on.
I'm one of them, to be honest. This is where I really benefit from having you in my life, because I don't honestly understand them. And I get really frustrated about, in the news, when you hear about people getting an immunity deal. When you look at the Jimmy McGrath case in Connecticut, I do believe in trial number one, that is what changed so much of the jury's thought process on this, was that two people who were still very much involved in this case and were very much a part of what happened that night just basically got off because they were helping to have one person basically take the fall.
Yeah, they were. They had a peripheral. Their actions contributed. At least that was the facts, is the way that it was related, is that their actions, some of the things that they did contributed to ultimately what occurred. But immunity kind of is like this legal protection that the government can offer. And generally it's offered, it doesn't say they're innocent, but that, because that's an important component.
But it kind of feels like they are.
You're right. Yeah.
But even that, like, what does that even mean? So they're not innocent, but they can't do jail time.
Well, no, it's your because the prosecution believes that the information that they have is more valuable to them to get the main
person
involved. Yes, exactly. But that, you know, like, the immunity is really something that prosecutors can offer, but it really goes back to even when police officers or investigators are investigating crimes, there's things that can happen way before the charge of a crime that might really, that people may not really realize. I'll give you an example. If a police officer or a detective arrests a person with drugs on them, and they don't want to go to jail, they're arrested. Yes, they're being processed at headquarters. Well, if I'm a detective investigating narcotics sales, then I'm going to want to talk to that person and see whether or not they can provide.
Like, you might broker a deal with them to find the big supplier, find the person. They're just a wingman, if you will.
Yeah, or start. Yeah, exactly. Like, do you have, because they want to get out of jail. They don't want to be arrested, even though they might be, or they are arrested already.
You want to find the head of the snake. You don't need to puncture anywhere on the way.
Times, some of those minor crimes can lead to larger crimes. And I'll give you an example. I think we talked about it one time offline. One of our patrol officers arrested a female for shoplifting.
Mm-hmm.
And inside her wallet was a business card for an escort service.
I do remember you telling me this story. Yes. I can't remember her name, and it's not important because she was an informant.
Yeah.
And now that's a whole different thing that I want to talk about in this. Do you think we have time for that too?
Yeah, we can.
We're going to make time for that because I want to know about informants too. But go on. Yeah. Yep. So you find this business card.
And, you know, she didn't want to be punished for the shoplifting, or she's doing everything that she can to get no jail time or whatever for shoplifting. Even though shoplifting these days, you're not going to go to jail anyway. But we started a discussion regarding the prostitution investigation.
Yes.
And the conversation, while I couldn't promise her that she would be unarrested. We don't unarrest people unless that's a whole other conversation about how police can unarrest somebody because there's a
process. Never even heard
in place.
Of that before. You can unarrest somebody.
We'll put a pin in that.
Do you have a pen?
No, I don't.
Are you joking? This is so unlike you.
I don't have a pen.
Oh my gosh, we don't have a pen?
So,
all right, I'll write it down.
Generally,
unarrest.
Yeah, police officers, when you arrest somebody, they go to trial. They go to trial. There are occasions where you will have probable cause to arrest somebody, but that at some point that probable cause evaporates like pretty quickly.
Okay.
So let's say they're being processed and you realize, oh my gosh, I have the wrong person. There is a process to unarrest. You can't just say, hey, no harm, no foul, I'll see you later.
So you're basically cleaning their record is what you mean.
You are erasing this arrest.
Got it. Okay. All right. Well, good. See, you just covered that. Okay, see, we don't have to do a podcast. See?
Do a podcast.
Have confidence. You know what you're talking about.
So now they, I can't promise her that she's not going to be held accountable for the charge she was arrested for. But I can tell her that if you cooperate and provide information, I can certainly put a good word in with a judge or with a prosecutor.
Right.
And that oftentimes is that little process. It's not immunity, but it starts to go down the path where somebody who has knowledge of a crime may in fact be involved in some of the crime, wants to start making a deal for themselves to make sure that they, you know, get the best deal that they can. And that oftentimes people don't realize that occurs quite a bit.
Well, I mean, but how do you go from, I guess, like, how do you go from informant though to immunity? So like, maybe those are two totally different things. Maybe I'm putting them too much together. But if you go back to the Rollo Valley case and the Jimmy McGrath death here in Connecticut, Jack Snyder, Tyler DeSilva, two of Allie's friends. One's a driver, one's in the back seat. Especially the driver in this case, it became super, super clear in that first trial that he was a very integral part in what led up to ultimately that fight breaking out and Jimmy McGrath dying that night. So why doesn't it go from, hey, if you could provide information and proof that this is really the person who committed the crime, we can try to work out with a judge a lesser punishment for you. How in the world do you jump to immunity? That's what I want to understand.
And it was, and I believe, and I'll have to look at it when we get to that portion of the discussion, I think it was absolute immunity.
It's like absolute immunity. Because the biggest thing that you probably heard me losing my mind about on my show, Gary, when I was covering this case, was I'm yelling at the attorney, who has nothing to do with the case, by the way. He's just our legal expert on my show. But I'm saying to him, I go, but why? Well, why would you offer it? Why do you go from A to Z when there are so many other letters in the alphabet? And he's like, well, I have nothing to do with the case. And I said, but why would you offer full immunity? So this is probably a dumb question. Can't you just be like, you have to show up? Or do you just plead the fifth or something? Like, I don't understand why you ever offer an immunity deal.
Yeah. So I think, the prosecutors want to hold the
here.
Person
did you want that? I just took all
no,
of his
no,
stuff.
No, you can
oh,
take that.
I could keep
no,
it. Okay, thanks.
Yeah,
thanks.
So prosecutors want to convict. Obviously, if they have a homicide situation, what they believe to be a homicide, they want to get the person that committed the crime. Exactly. And so part of their evaluation, working with police and law enforcement and the investigators, is to say, this person that we're granting immunity to, they have such critical information that giving them immunity so that they cooperate fully, that information will help our case drastically.
Yeah, but like, I don't even think in this case they did it very well because it actually, I think, led to the outcome of the killer. I'm just saying. Yeah, I mean, and to be fair, he did admit to doing it. He just said it was in self-defense. So he did admit to doing it. So we're not saying something that's out of the alleged phase. He did admit to doing it.
Right.
But I actually think the immunity deals did not help the case in them landing that one person who, you know, falls, you know, for the whole thing. I actually think the immunity deals hurt them I mean, I don't know if you feel the same way.
Well, I think there was a lot of discussion where the jury couldn't get over the fact, and the conversation was, why did these, I think there were two individuals that got immunity.
Yes. At least there were. Yeah, okay. The two friends. Yeah,
why
yeah, there were two of
them.
Why
did they get immunity when in the explanation, one of them provided
especially
the weapon?
Right.
So, yeah, I can't. It's confusing to understand why they had to go from that. Maybe they give the third party the immunity because they can
saying.
Get the person
like,
with the weapon.
Did they not know this information before giving an immunity deal? Because to me, and again, I'm no attorney, but when you find out that somebody is willingly admitting mm-hmm. to giving the person the murder weapon, what would make you think that this is going to land you a across the board jury that's going to agree with the prosecution?
Well, so let's back up a little bit.
Okay.
As they're starting to present the case, they're looking obviously to an important component of this case because it did involve a knife. They're looking to kind of spell out how did he get the knife.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I'm assuming that immunity was offered before they knew that the individual admitted to getting the knife.
Okay.
That's the key. It's not like this one individual goes in and says, for the first interview, and says, oh yeah, by the way, we pulled up the car, I did this, and I gave him a knife. You know, I just outright admit
it. I just feel like, though, that is so risky. I feel like that's risky, then, to give an immunity when you don't even know if they're going to give viable information to help the prosecution. And then how do you know that you didn't just give immunity to somebody that probably is implicated in that case? I don't know.
So it's not. So again, we don't know the particulars of the negotiation
right.
behind the scenes.
Sorry, but I'm getting heated.
No,
that's not you. That's not your job.
It's good to get heated because this is a discussion that is being heated because
yeah.
people are all talking about it. So if you are looking at an investigation and you're trying to figure out how can I prosecute the one that killed this individual.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, I'm sure there were some discussions with attorneys where the attorneys would get together in a room. It's not blind, like you get immunity and then you get immunity and then tell us what you know. It's kind of like, okay, let's have a discussion about, it's kind of a bizarre way in which you look at things because
mm-hmm.
there's a federal level of this kind of discussions that can't be held against you.
Right.
It's like my client has information that can be very important to you, but my client doesn't want to be implicate himself in the discussion.
It's like a really tough game of poker. Like it feels like a very like, am I bluffing? Am I not? I don't know. It's a lot of games behind closed doors. It feels like
it is. And I'll give you an example. On the federal level, there's a concept called a proffer.
A proffer?
Proffer.
Okay.
Yes, on a federal case. And so in a proffer, an individual can come in, if they are willing to, with an attorney generally, and they can be as 100% truthful and say and tell law enforcement whatever. Like, I did this and I
And there's just no record of it.
The law enforcement cannot use that information against them. So it's like we can come in.
Wow.
I know. It's hard to understand.
No, but I guess it's like, well, so then why even bother doing that? You can't use any of it. So if I share all these details about something and it's in a proffer, mm-hmm. what is that now leaving it to be like, all right, Gary, now figure it out. Figure out how you're going to prove this since you can't use anything that I said.
Okay. So I'll give you an example of it.
Could you please give me an example of it?
Let's say hypothetically that
you
and I we commit a crime. It's like, whose car are we taking? We go and commit a crime.
Sure.
Okay. And you have information about me because you witnessed it and you drove the car and I'm being charged federally. Well, if you talk, the information that you provide to law enforcement is going to implicate me, but it could potentially implicate you as well on a federal level.
Right.
So your attorney says to the U.S. Attorney's Office, let's come in, we'll proffer my client. And that means that, Melissa, everything you say, including the things that are going to maybe implicate you,
mm-hmm.
is, as long as you're truthful and they enter into an agreement, it's not like willy-nilly where it's like, come on in, we'll put a bubble over our heads. It's like the truth room, we just kind of say it. It's really a process that we enter into the agreement that you will be proffered, meaning that you're going to provide all information. Now, as long as you don't lie, Meaning you have come to the realization that I am going to give you all the information that I know about this case, and then you are proffered, and you provide that information. Yes, you're providing information that you drove the car, that you bought the gun for me, but you're giving up the big person.
Right.
The one that.
But does that only happen at the federal level?
Well,
could that not happen at the state level?
It sometimes happens in like plea deals, and it happens in these immunity cases.
Oh, okay.
Even in these immunity cases, the prosecutor, I'm sure, I can't speak of the prosecutor, didn't just kind of get into a room and say, look at the paperwork and say, okay, I'll give immunity to that kid.
Sure, of course
kid.
Not. No,
they
no,
have
I get
discussions.
That. Okay.
And what happens in trial, and you've seen this because you've covered some other trials on your show that have happened in different locations where evidence isn't admissible or the dance of it. Like you said, kind of said, it's like this weird little process.
It is. It's like a really, it's like an intense game of poker. Yeah,
it is. But you've seen when people come into trial that sometimes a defense attorney will raise an issue. Well, maybe because some of the information that was gleaned, the defense might say, you can't use that information because you got it from a proffer.
Mm.
And I'm using proffer as just an example because it's easy to explain it.
No, but that is helpful. So here's probably a silly question, but when you're in a courtroom, if something happened in a proffer and you then start questioning in regards to that to try and get them to admit it, is that... Would they say like objection or
yeah,
and,
yeah? They'd stay,
but
probably
but
say
is the judge
out.
Also
no,
in those meetings? Like how?
No,
can
they're not. But the what would happen would be anytime there's an objection, depending on what the objection is, the judge in some cases might say that.
Is this like a counsel approach the bench? And
yeah,
we need
and
to know why you're talking about it. This
excuse
isn't a proffer.
The jury,
okay,
excuse
or,
the jury.
I just like that
I mean,
word now.
That's the proffer.
Yeah,
yeah.
I also think. Did you make a town reference? Was that the town that you referenced before? Whose car are we going to take?
Did you just quote Ben Affleck?
And that's hysterical.
Whose car we taking?
Okay,
yes.
Sorry. I knew it. Go on. Sorry. I had to circle back to that because I definitely,
yes.
I'm like, you live in a movie. But anyways.
I do. Yes.
So I think it's interesting.
Well, that kind of gives so they're not handed out without some really thought in it.
Sure.
The big problems that happen. So now you look at it. I'm a cop. I try to say to somebody, you provide information. I'll give you, I'll give a good word to the judge.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times that works. I arrest somebody for a drug transaction. I can get you the bigger dealer. And so they cooperate. We enter into an agreement. You become an informant, meaning that I sign you up as an informant. I give you money for every deal that you do.
But you can't break laws while you're an informant, right?
No,
like you can't keep drug dealing and stuff, right? Like if they were to continue doing that, you can't keep them as an informant,
right?
So
here's what happens.
Probably sounds dumb.
No,
I'm serious.
It's not. No, it's not. Because what happens with all of these processes, all of them, even what we're seeing now with the immunity that was granted, it becomes an issue of credibility for an informant. So that if you're an informant, I sign you up and the process has to be what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So that when I go to trial, generally, I can say that I utilized an informant for this. And then if I'm doing it the right way, I can establish that informant as credible. So that informant doesn't necessarily have to come in and testify.
Okay.
I know there's a lot of stuff.
No, but that is really interesting. I never understood, though, why you could say that this is a credible informant, but they stay anonymous. So it sounds horrible, but couldn't you just honestly go into a courtroom and be like, nope, I know because I have an informant. They told me this. So,
well, yeah. And then,
I mean, you know,
well, they can. And then that's why you have to follow a process. And the defense attorney is going to say, well, you know, there has to be credibility to it. And if the informant is committing crimes at the same time, then their credibility goes down.
Sure,
you know, even in a proffer, if you lie in a proffer, you can the proffer deals off the table.
Sure, well, because you went against the
right.
the
right.
What was it? The terms of the agreement.
Exactly, terms of the proffer. But I think that this the case of immunity and when it's granted and why it was given in this case so absolute immunity. As opposed to saying, okay, you provide information, any information that you give us that we can't find elsewhere, then okay, that's fine. Like if you admit to giving the knife, fine. But if we prove that in another way, then you don't get absolute immunity. You know, you don't get immunity.
But even that is kind of, so wait, is there such thing as absolute immunity? I thought it was just immunity.
Well, no, there's different levels of immunity. So there's a transactional immunity, meaning that you give me whatever you give me, I will not prosecute you for what you tell me.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean that I'm not doing an investigation on my own and I'm going to find out on my own. Let's use this case as an example.
Okay.
The individual admits that I gave him the knife and we didn't know that, let's say. So I come in, we talk, and the prosecutor says, I'm going to give you immunity because I know you have information. And I say, yes, I gave the knife to the individual that killed him. Well, if I can find that another way, then...
But then that's where I would have used the backseat kid here.
Yeah, yeah. That's
where I would have... Exactly. I could understand the immunity because now why not then say, okay, yeah, no, I have proof of that because now you have found a backdoor, I would think. I don't get the two immunities with the only two... I don't know.
Yeah.
It just doesn't sit well with me.
Well, I think that... I think that it doesn't sit well with a lot of people, and I think part of the reason it doesn't is because of the outcome. Because of the outcome was not guilty, correct, on that first trial.
Yeah, but I even do think, to some degree, even people who are critical of the person who committed the crime, I do think there was a little bit of, whoa, this person is taking the fall for something that was really, yes, they were the person who went through with the action, but leading up to that, I mean, there were decisions made by the driver, for example, in this case, to keep going back to the scene, to keep egging the people on, to throw the punch. You know, like there were other things that brought up leading up to what ultimately was. It was, you know, so to me, I do think there were people who got passes who, and I do think that also is what the jury saw, which is why this person is not in jail still.
Yeah, well, that is the case. So,
is why.
Like when we start looking at bank robberies or we look at other things, like if you drive the car, if you drive the car to somebody, generally you're an accomplice.
Right.
So to just wave that and say, yes, you gave him the knife or let's grant you immunity from everything as long as you give us that information, they must have really thought that that was so valuable that I'm not going to prosecute you at all because that information is so valuable. And that's where it comes down to. They have the ability to do it, and they took advantage of that, and they gave them that information. Whether or not that information was so valuable that they couldn't get it some other way, I mean, at this point, we won't know.